It's Hot 93.7, hot937.com. Voices, once again, this is the second edition of the show. And first of all, I want to thank you guys for tuning in. The response has been crazy. I've received so many calls and inboxes from different people who want to come in. And I had to put that to the side because this young lady that I have on the line right now, I've known her for years. All right. I've been in her home and you know, this is an incident that happened in Farmington about a week or so ago. And I'm going to let her explain it. But when I saw the article, I want to tell you because I know that she doesn't bother anyone. She means right by everyone. And she's been a genuine, kind, sweet person for as long as I've known her. And to have something like this happen, I was upset. I was furious, and I'm going to be honest with you, like the range of emotions that I had, I really had to, you know, calm myself down because I couldn't believe that something like that happened to someone like this. And so I am going to allow her to talk about this, and we're gonna get into it. We're going to talk about it. You guys know how I am. When I feel passionate about something, I got to get it all off my chest. So Jessica Harrison is here. And Jessica, how are you this morning?
I'm well, thank you. And, you know, thank you so much for having me and speaking to me about this. And I'm doing well.
Yeah, so let's talk about what actually happened here. Actually, let's go back to, you know, what led up to this, because you've been pretty active.
Right.
In the community with things that are going on and maybe racial diversity or the lack thereof. And so you've been pretty active in that field and it led up to some things and which led up to this incident. So let's backtrack and go there first.
Right. Well, I mean, if we're going to go all the way back, before COVID hit and about the beginning of this school year, myself and a group of other Black and Brown moms in the town got together really just because we found that there were some racially charged issues that were going on in the different schools, in some of the elementary schools, in, you know, our middle school. And we realized that these things were happening and it wasn't just a one-off. They were happening over and over, but because, you know, we don't always talk to each other about those things, you know, sometimes I think that we get into the mindset of, you know, what do you expect? You know, you're Black, you're in a very predominantly white town in Farmington. Sometimes it's just about, you know, keeping your head down, doing your thing and doing what you have to do. But we were having these conversations and it became really disturbing that these racially charged incidents were happening, and we didn't feel like enough attention was being paid to them. And we didn't feel like, you know, the action items that followed or were supposed to were being followed and were being followed through. And so we established the Parents of Black and Brown Children in Farmington Public Schools, and we met. And we were able to meet with, you know, the administration. We met with the assistant superintendent. A few of the principals from the different schools came. Some of the teachers came. The woman that's in charge of the curriculum came. And we were able to have these conversations and let them know what our concerns were. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, with COVID, you know, everything kind of had to stop because we weren't in school. We weren't meeting in person, and so we had to kind of put a hold on it. So this is something that has been on my radar for a while. Mm-hmm. But if you fast forward to the murder of George Floyd, it really triggered a lot of unrest mm-hmm. within the town, specifically surrounding some Black Lives Matter banners that were put up.
Okay.
So in Farmington/technically Unionville, we have a bridge. I call it iconic, and people kind of laugh at me because it is such a small town. But to me, in my hometown, this bridge is iconic. It's the Big Bird Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And traditionally, it's always been used to hang banners. It always says the class of, right now it says the class of 2021 because 2020 just graduated. People will hang banners for, you know, happy birthday so-and-so, congratulations so-and-so. And it's just, it's a landmark in the town.
Mm-hmm.
And I will never forget the feeling. It had to be the Sunday after Mr. Floyd was murdered. I was driving through Unionville, driving home, and my son and I were in the car, and we were driving to the bridge, and somebody had put a Black Lives Matter banner over the bridge.
Wow.
And I get emotional just thinking about it because I can't even explain to you the feeling that it gave me.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like we were seen and we belonged and we were valued, and just that somebody would do that, it just meant so much to me. And it meant so much to me that my young son, Black son, could see this as well.
Wow.
Right. And so within 2 days, and I want to say that that first banner was actually it was actually put up by two young women from the high school, two high school students.
Wow.
That up. Within a couple of days, it was taken down.
Really?
And so, yes, it was removed from the bridge. And so they actually went up and they put it up again.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was taken down as well. And so, you know, we have some Facebook groups within town, and people were saying that, you know, it could have been the wind, or, you know, we don't know if someone actually took it down, and really just a lot of excuses and wanting to sweep it under the rug.
Right. The typical excuses, and let's just make it go away any way that we can.
Exactly. Exactly. Shut up and go away.
Right.
Let's move on. Right?
Right.
And so, you know, a few friends and I got together. I don't know if I can use their names on the radio.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So it was myself, Alyssa Jackman, and Katie Cowell Reeves. We all grew up in town. We all decided to come back here and raise our families here. I'm obviously a Black woman with my Black family, and Alyssa and Katie are both raising biracial children. So, you know, obviously the humanity of it should matter to everyone, regardless
right.
of their color, their race. But, you know, it hit home for them as well. And we said, okay, well, listen, we're not going to let this go. We're going to put another Black Lives Matter banner up on Big Bird Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did it. It's funny because it's kind of like a rite of passage to put a banner on Big Bird Bridge, but neither of us had ever done it before. It took us forever. We made sure, I mean, this was like, listen, there's a reason why this is meant for, you know, 18-year-old high school students. We were struggling, but, you know, we made it happen.
Right.
And we were very careful to make sure that it was heavily secured with plastic zip ties. And we went up there. We hung it. I want to say that it was hung by 10 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
that morning. I think that must have been a Saturday morning. And by noon, it was gone.
Wow.
Somebody had taken it. Mm. We were heartbroken, but I think that we were also really angry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we went back to the bridge, and you could see where someone had cut the sheet off because the zip ties were still hanging and there was still cloth attached to the zip ties. So this was something that someone went up and did maliciously. This was not the wind. It was an absolutely gorgeous day. And there were a lot of people on that bridge at the time because it's part of our walking trail. So while we were putting up, there were bikes going by, there were people jogging. And so knowing that someone probably saw this person take it down and that they had the audacity to do it in broad daylight was just jarring for us.
Wow.
And even more, you know, for me, I took it to another level because I feel like, you know, I don't know who this person is, right?
Right.
This person could be someone that I see in the grocery store. This could be someone that, you know, my son is friends with their children and they're asking for play dates or, you know, just, you know, someone that I'm even maybe friends with on Facebook and we exchange pleasantries every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
It's really unnerving not knowing who this is.
Right.
And so what did we do? We put up another one. we posted about it on Facebook, and the response that we got was absolutely overwhelming. We went up that very next day. Actually, that's not true. We went up on Monday morning, and this time we enlisted, you know, our call to action inspired a bunch of other people. I think it was the three of us the first time that we put the sign up, and there were about 10 of us the second time.
Okay.
And we put it up again. Mm. And this time we had some help with people. Shout out to Tanya Adorno and Brian Jackman. They were good with the logistics on how to actually get this done. We got the banner up. It was even bigger and better. And we put it up and we let people know, hey, you know, comes the bridge at 4. And we had a bit of a rally that day as well, that afternoon. People from the community came and they brought their own signs and we all put them up. It was fantastic. It was beautiful.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so if you're just joining us, all right, this is Voices on Hot 93.7, hot937.com. I have Jessica Harrison on the line. And we're going through the course of events that led up to this just, I don't know, this angering event that happened. And so I'm letting her tell her story so that we can understand step by step how this happened, how we got here. And then we're going to have another discussion afterwards. So, yeah, go ahead. Continue.
Yeah. So from there, we decided we needed to have a rally. And actually, in the midst of all of this, there was a little girl who had made herself, she and her father had made a Black Lives Matter sign themselves by hand, and they put it up in their yard, and someone came and defaced that sign as well. They put white paint over her sign and, you know, defaced their private property. And so all of this is going on at the same time. And the ladies and I decided to have a rally in Unionville. Between then and at this point, there had been two smaller rallies. I do want to make a point of saying that a group of high school students held a rally, a Black Lives Matter rally at the high school. A group of high school students and even younger families in the area held a rally outside of one of the major churches on Main Street in Farmington. And so this is kind of all leading up to, you know, what's going on. And so we had a silent march. Actually, what we did was, because everybody had been having rallies, and I was realizing that some people's response was they didn't understand why there was so much commotion, for lack of a better word, over one person. And over the murder of one person. And I wanted people to realize that this is something that's been going on since the beginning of America.
Right.
Forever, right? And so we decided to do the silent march. And we figured, you know, while we have people's ears, while people are wanting to pay attention and wanting to educate themselves and wanting to do something, let's make them aware of just how pervasive this issue is. And so instead of just regular signs, we provided signs for each person. We wrote the name of a person, man, woman, child, or however you identify, that black person who had been murdered by police or by white supremacists. Mm-hmm. So we let people know that we would be, you know, providing signs with the names, and each person could carry a name, or they could bring the name of a person that resonates with them.
Right.
And so we had over 200 names of people, and that's not even, you know, scratching the surface. Mm. And we had a fantastic turnout. Almost all of our signs were carried by someone. So we had that many people.
Wow.
We had a lot of people come and bring their own names as well. We had some people coming representing Trans Lives Mattering, and it was awesome.
Mm.
And we wanted it to be a memorial service. We had fantastic support from our state reps and our town reps. We had a representative from Black Lives Matter Connecticut come and speak. We had a young lady who grew up in Farmington and went through Farmington Public Schools as well. Her son wrote a poem about what was going on. We had her read the poem. We observed an 8-minute and 40-second moment of silence. In honor of Mr. Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
Also really just to drive home how long that is for someone to have their knee on someone's neck.
Yeah, exactly.
So we had that event, and it was really successful. We marched around Unionville Center, and then out of that, in the midst of that, I should say, Farmington decided that we needed to create a racial equity task force through the town council, because in the past we've had the Human Rights Committee.
Right.
Originally, that was meant to really target the needs of those that have different abilities, so to make sure that our town and our town facilities were accessible to everybody, mm-hmm. regardless of their abilities. And then with all of the unrest surrounding after George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery, the town realized that we need a very specifically geared task force for racial inequity in our town.
Mm.
And so that came about.
Wow. So right. Now you were selected to be a part of this, or are you heading
yes.
this committee? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
No, so I am not heading the committee.
Okay.
I was selected to be a part of it. The committee is made up of a few folks from town council. We have a Farmington Police Department liaison. We have two or three students, current students from the high school. So we have young folks that are involved. And then we have several black Farmington residents that are involved. And that's the core of the group. We do have a meeting coming up just to get what is called the charge ironed out, which is what our mission statement is going to be and what our goals that we want to accomplish are going to be. And then after that, it will be open to the public. So it'll be open to Farmington residents, regardless of, you know, who you are, how you identify, to come and be a part, because we have to do it together. It has to be a collective effort.
Right.
Really excited about that. Yeah.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right.
I'm really excited. I feel honored to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, once again, if you're joining us, this is Voices on Hot 93.7, hot937.com. We have Jessica Harrison here on the line, resident in Farmington. Just been voted on the committee for racial equity in Farmington, correct? Am I saying
yes,
it correct?
Correct.
Okay, okay.
I was sworn in, I should say.
Sworn in, yes.
Sworn in.
She's official. Official, okay. All right, so now, this leads to a very unnerving incident that happened, and what was it, maybe less than a week or a little over a week ago?
It was a week ago, exactly, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I came home, and I started opening my mail, and I opened an envelope, obviously addressed to me, and inside was a card, and it looked like a raffle ticket to me when I first looked at it. I wasn't quite registering exactly what I was seeing. I pulled it out, and it said, it read that it was a federal deer hunting license across the top.
Mm.
And paraphrase, it said that, you know, this license gives the holder the license to kill niggers with dogs or without. It goes on and on, et cetera, et cetera. There's a portion of the ticket that you can actually tear off, almost like a toe tag, kind of like if you were to hunt deer or rabbit or whatever people hunt. Mm. And so I pulled it out. I looked at it. On the back of it, there was a message, handwritten message to me, that this was someone that I had insulted, and that they were trying to insult me back. And it took a minute for me to really process exactly what I was looking at.
Mm.
Because nobody would think that they would ever receive something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody would think that something like this would even exist,
mm-hmm.
first of all. This was obviously something that this person had in their home waiting for the right time to use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this wasn't something that they Googled and printed and sent to me. This was something that they received. They've been holding on to it. You know, there were tack marks on it as though it had been on somebody's wall. And it was mortifying.
Wow.
Yeah.
Voices, Hot 93.7, Hot 93.7.com. This is the disturbing part to me, because the statement, Black Lives Matter, that statement seems to be so offensive to some people. And this is where the discussion needs to happen, because I've had a number of discussions with people, and they say, you know, you say Black Lives Matter, but all lives matter. I never said that all lives didn't matter. But
right.
What you have to understand is, based on recent actions, Black lives don't seem to be inclusive in the All Lives Matter discussion when innocent, unarmed Black people are being gunned down by law enforcement who are sworn to protect the lives of these people.
Yes.
All right. And so where the problem comes in is, we've seen, I watched a video recently that was posted of a man. He had a knife in his hand, and he's walking down an officer, and it did not occur to that officer at one time to reach for his firearm.
Exactly.
This guy walked away alive. All right, let's break down this George Floyd thing, because he was accused of passing off a fake $20 bill that was not fake.
Right.
And he lost his life for that.
Yeah.
All right. During that same time, we had someone who was on the run, a killer who was on the run, because
yes, from UConn.
He was on the run for killing two people near UConn or somewhere in that area. They found this guy, and the video and image that we had from that was him sitting next to a car drinking a bottle of water that had been provided to him by law enforcement. So, and when they talk about retraining officers and stuff like that, I still don't buy that, because if you have the wherewithal to say, okay, we're going to take this person in unharmed, why can't it be the same thing for the Black guys who've lost their lives at your hands?
Agreed. I think back to the young man who lost his life. I'm so sorry, the name is escaping me right now. I did post about it in Aurora, Colorado,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, he had some different abilities, and someone called the police because he was walking down the street with a face mask on, and come to find out he did that because he got cold easily. And the police subdued him, and they shot him up with ketamine, and they asphyxiated him, and he died. Mm-hmm. And I think about, you know, this is the same police department that apprehended the Aurora, Colorado movie theater shooter alive.
Exactly.
And well.
Exactly.
You know, there's obviously Dylann Roof, who murdered the church attendees in South Carolina, in Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
And he was apprehended and brought to get food because he was hungry, you know? So
and
there's just no excuse.
Let's be honest here. Like you said, he was apprehended taken to get food. What he did was the definition of a terrorist act.
Exactly.
It was a terrorist act, but he was not treated as such.
Right.
And so you're treating these young unarmed black men as if they're terrorists for walking down the street.
Yes.
But these non-black males who have done terrorist acts are being treated as law-abiding citizens.
Yes.
That's where the disjoint is. Because if you're a black man in America, you're concerned. I always use this analogy. If I'm pulled over for running a red light, the least of my concerns is the ticket.
Correct.
My biggest concern is, will I make it away from this interaction with this officer? Will I leave here alive? Will I be able to pull off with my life? Or will I be dragged out of my car, beaten, all right, maybe killed because I was driving while black?
Right.
All right. And I had this discussion with a white friend of mine, and that's what made it clear to him. I said, tell me what you think about when you get pulled over if you run a red light. He was like, oh, my God, I'm thinking about, you know, I'm going to have this ticket. My insurance is going to go up and this, that. And
right.
Right. And
right.
This was a real discussion. OK. And I'm looking at him and he's like, what? I said, do you realize that that's the very last thing that I'm thinking about when I get pulled over? My heart starts racing immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately. Because I'm wondering, OK, am I going to get dragged out of the car? You know, am I going to be face down on the ground? You know, let's say it's a winter month. And are you going to have me face down on the ground in the cold? What's going to happen here? Am I going to be dragged off to jail? What's going on? And he was like, really? And I said, look at all the footage that's out there. It gives me a reason to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
Innocent men are dying with interactions with officers.
Right.
And so innocent black men are dying from this. So I'm a black male. I'm not a small person. I'm not a small guy. So right off, it becomes intimidating.
Right.
You know, and I'll be honest, most of the officers that I've come in contact with, I'm a lot bigger than them.
Mm.
So that's already intimidating. If I look the wrong way, they're reaching for their gun.
Mm-hmm.
Because the perception is that we're angry, we're combative, and the only way to get us to calm down is to put a hole in us.
Mm.
So that's why the statement Black Lives Matter, because in the All Lives Matter statement, we don't feel included based on the facts that we have, based on the results that we have out here. We don't feel included in that statement. So it is necessary to drive that home. Black lives do matter, because the All Lives Matter seems to apply to everyone else except black people.
Agreed.
So until it is clear to us that black lives matter, and then we can say all lives matter, we're going to continue to say black lives matter. And so, I mean, going back, all right, once again, this is Voices. It's Hot 93.7, Hot 93.7.com. Big man here. I have Jessica Harrison on the line. And we're talking about the incident that happened in Farmington just about a week ago. And she received what's considered, what I would consider hate mail for driving home the fact that Black Lives Matter. So if it is that offensive to you to hear that Black Lives Matter, then you're a part of the problem.
And big man, I do want to take a step back. I apologize if it's it is taking a step back, but
no.
I do want to say his name. Elijah McClain is the young man that was murdered by Aurora, Colorado police in 2019. And we didn't even find out about it until, after George Floyd was murdered. But I do want to honor him and honor his name and be clear.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So this has gotten national attention. This incident.
Yeah, apparently. So I will say that, we did call the police. They came and they took a statement and they took the card in the envelope. And I quite frankly, I had to sit on it for a couple of days. I had to process it. Part of me didn't want to give this person the satisfaction of knowing that I even received it.
Mm-hmm.
But part of me also knew that this person wanted me to be afraid and to be quiet. And so I'm thinking that this is someone that I've had an interaction with virtually because, with social distancing,
mm-hmm.
who am I even talking to in person for mm-hmm. me to offend or insult you?
Right.
So I posted it mm-hmm. on Facebook.
Mm.
And it took off.
Wow.
As it should have.
Because this is, this is a sore spot. This is
right.
a sore spot for the state. I think, and I applaud those people who have stepped forward to show their support for you.
It's been overwhelming. There have been so many people. The love is overwhelming and everybody's support counts. I will say that the support from my neighbors and people in my town has been incredible. And I say that because with all of the things that Farmington has been going through, just to have that outward support of my neighbors, it really meant a lot.
Mm.
This was a shock to people's system. Many people had never even seen anything like this before. I had never seen anything like this before except for, in a museum.
Mm-hmm.
Quite frankly, big man, I've never been called a nigger to my face until this incident.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that my experience is kind of unique in that. This
mm-hmm.
is my first time, microaggressions, we've all experienced those, and that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something so ugly was, and I use the term loosely, said because this person did not provide a name or return address.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the first time that someone has said that to me or directed that toward me. But the response was overwhelming. I had people reach out to me that say, I'm from a neighboring town, but I saw this because my, sister-in-law in Chicago posted it. So it's pretty unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty unbelievable.
And it has to put you on edge right now, because as you stated earlier, you don't know if it's someone who you've interacted with, someone who you may have exchanged pleasantries with in the line at a grocery store or something. So going out, you have to be on edge. And I mean, it's frustrating that here we are in 2020. Okay. And we're facing these types of issues. And so the perception was that, we're past that. We're past that.
Yes.
But,
mm-hmm.
and it has been also evident in recent, actually years,
mm-hmm.
In recent years, and it's been boom right in your face.
Yeah.
To the point where it's disheartening, it's disgusting, and it's so unfortunate that people in this day and age, with all the stuff that's going on in this country right now, that this is their main focus, and this is such a source of frustration for them because someone's skin is a different color than theirs.
And they're asking just for basic human rights and basic human respect, right?
And why is that so difficult to have?
Right, right.
You know, why is it so difficult to want what should be, it just should be a given.
Right.
And it is so difficult to ask for, but then you have to go back to a time. And I don't even know if the laws have been rewritten or if this has been rewritten, but we weren't even considered a whole person.
Right.
All right. And so when people are saying we have to go and look back and find out if even we're still considered to this day a full person by rule of law, you know, because these are things that get looked over. Because we may have been afforded certain opportunities, but by definition, you see, and there's some people who still stand on that, and they may look at you and think that as they're looking at you, you're walking around like you're a whole human being, but you're still only 3/5 of a person.
Right. Right. And how dare you ask for more? How dare you have an opinion on it?
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
And that's the attitude that's given. And that's where this reaction comes from. How dare you stand before me and tell me that Black Lives Matter?
Exactly.
When it takes more than one of you to make a person.
Mm.
You see, so that's the attitude that's the underlying attitude that's there. And that's the reality of it. And that's what we have to understand. When dealing with this, because so many of us think, okay, well, we have this, we have jobs, we have the ability to vote, but are you still considered a full person? That's the question that we have to answer for ourselves and understand, because there's some things that we need to answer first so that we know how to approach this problem.
Mm-hmm. And even if by law, even if by law we are considered a full person, you know, racism is systemic, right? So it affects everything. You know, yes, by law, we are a full person. However, you know, the education disparities are staggering. Connecticut, I want to say they were number one at one point, but I know for sure that now we're top three states with the largest education disparity. Which means that our haves are getting a great education and our have-nots aren't.
Right.
Right? And this is the North. And people tend to think that, you know, that's a problem of the South. And we have our issues as well. You know, housing, access to housing in integrated areas, I should say, it is lacking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see across the country, you know, our voter rights are being taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're not, you know, they can't ask you for a literacy test anymore. You know, that's not legal.
Mm-hmm.
But they can ask you for specific forms of ID that if you live in a certain area, you might not be, you might not have. You know, in some rural areas, people might have their, you know, I think it's their Section 8 ID, but they don't have a driver's license.
Right.
They don't accept anything but a driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're closing down polling centers in predominantly Black neighborhoods, and they're saying it's due to COVID or funding or whatever, what have you. They're finding ways around, you know, us actually being considered 3/4 of a person, but still to treat us as such.
Mm.
It needs to stop.
Exactly. And that's where, you know, we need to have a real discussion with ourselves, first of all, and before we can go and combat this. And so, I mean, even when you think about talks of reparations, okay? When you think about that and how everyone says it's such a slippery slope and it's so difficult to talk about, but it wasn't difficult to talk about bailing out these automotive companies.
Yes.
It wasn't difficult. It wasn't difficult.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't difficult to talk about bailing out these banks and stuff like that. It wasn't difficult to talk about that, but it's difficult to talk about this because what happens is, you see, you have to understand that with most black people, 90-some-odd% of black people, they're starting from scratch.
Yeah.
See, wealth has been passed down for generations and generations with others. But with most times in the cases of black people, you're starting from scratch. So now this kind of sort of levels the playing field because now you have a way to start a wealth stream for your family. All right. You're getting a kickstart with it with the reparations talk. So it's deeper than all of that because there is an economic and power struggle that's attached to that. And so we have to identify it and we have to know what we're talking about when we're going into these discussions and arguments. And I mean, this is just, it's frustrating on so many levels because you would think in this day and age, especially with what you're doing and how you're peacefully trying to do this stuff, and then how dare someone say that they're offended because you made a statement that Black Lives Matter. It's more offensive.
Insulted was the word that they used. Insulted.
Insulted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Insulted. But how insulting is it that you're saying that they don't?
Right.
Because that's basically what you're saying. And you know.
You know, this person aside, because obviously, you know, this person is quite literally a card-carrying racist.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that the majority of people don't realize that they have these racist ideologies,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
These racist thoughts.
Right.
This is just something, this is just the way they are. This is just the way they've grown up. This is the way, you know, quote unquote, the world is. And they don't necessarily think about it. And so one calls you out and says, that's racist, or you're being racist, or you are racist for that, it can be very offensive to them. It's like a shock to their system. They don't understand. And it takes a lot of digging themselves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's it too. You know, a lot of people spoke out about what was sent to me because it's just egregious, you know, it's a shock.
Mm-hmm.
But even more importantly, we have to have these conversations with people that would never think to send something like this,
mm-hmm.
but you know, are saying that they can't support Black Lives Matter because you know they're pro-choice or because you know they don't support Black families is what I've heard, or even, you know, we've gotten a lot of pushback about one of the things that's come about is we're setting up a committee to investigate changing our high school mascot. And I say our high school mascot, but really the whole town identifies with our high school colors and our high school mascot with the Farmington Indians. And we got a lot of pushback with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you know, things like what was sent to me,
mm-hmm.
is obviously racist, but we need to really target that unconscious bias and racism because that's what is feeding the unequal power struggle.
Right, because overall there's a discussion that not just has to happen, it needs to happen because there's so many people who may be saying simple things that they don't even think about on a daily basis, and these things could be absolutely 1,000% offensive to black people, and it could be an underlying racism that they don't even know is there. And so these things, it's good to have healthy discussion about this, but the problem is when some people are so dead set on never having a conversation about these things because they feel like there's nothing wrong with the way things are now.
100%.
That's where the problem lies. And that's on both sides of the coin.
Or they feel like they aren't the culprit, you know.
Right.
You get the, my family was poor and we pulled ourselves up by our bootstraps, so I don't have privilege, people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so they feel like they're not a part of the problem, so there's no need to have the conversation.
No, there's a need to have the conversation with everyone. Because even those people who have, you know, they'll say, hey, I came from nothing, and now look at me. There's still a certain amount of privilege that was attached to that.
Most definitely.
And so we have to identify that as well and help you understand some things that you may have been afforded that some people aren't afforded because of the color of their skin.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, I really want to say thank you so much for this, because to open up and talk about it, especially when I know this is something that, you know, has you on edge, I mean, it has me on edge, and it didn't even happen to me. So, you know, even walking through the store now, it's like looking over the shoulder type of thing. Things that I would do occasionally, now I'm doing more often.
Right.
And I can't even imagine how you might feel, you know, just traveling at night, traveling in general, going in the store, different things like that. These things are not comfortable anymore because of what has happened to you.
Right.
And so it bothers me that you have to go through, me knowing you personally, it really bothers me. You understand? It really, really bothers me. And it was important to have you on here. And you know, I'm hoping that, you know, law enforcement and everyone who's looking into this can find the culprit. And I want this person to be held accountable, because this is a hate crime.
Mm-hmm.
That was a hate crime. And most likely, that's probably the same person who's done all the other stuff, taking the signs down and painting over someone's sign on their yard. That's probably the same person or group of people.
Right. Right. And I appreciate you. I do appreciate you giving me this platform to speak about it, because in the off chance that this person is listening or has access to it, you know, I want to let them know that more than being afraid, this has really just emboldened me, and it's pushed me to go harder. And, you know, I just feel like, you know, for their sake, I hope that they have more of these in their home and they did not waste this, you know, this card that they've been waiting to use just on me, because it definitely will not have its intended consequences. You know, we're still doing rallies, but even more, we're working on this from the systemic level. We're going to the town, and we have the support of the town and the town council, and we're not stopping. Mm. And so more than anything, I just want them to know that if anything, you lit a fire under me, and I appreciate it.
Wow. That, Jessica Harrison, thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time. And
thank you.
Don't stop the fight. We're in your corner. You know, you know how to reach me. I'm a phone call away.
I know.
Oh, man. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Voices on Hot 93.7, hot937.com. If you're interested in being a part of the show, you can hit me up at DJ Big Man, 2 G's, 2 N's, on Instagram and Twitter, or at Hot 93.7 FM, or you could call directly 1-800-488-9307, and we can talk about it. Once again, Jessica, thank you so much, and don't stop the fight.
I will not.
All right. It's Hot 93.7. Keep it here.